Hey guys, it's Mina. If you're looking for a new podcast to listen to, check out Sports with Katie Nolan. You might already subscribe. You probably do, but if not, check it out. It's a lot of fun. You never know what Katie and her crew are going to get into. Last week, they talked about Daryl Bevel. Very curious about that. The McRib and the Royal Family. You can find Sports with Katie Nolan wherever you get your podcasts. Here's our show. Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks it was totally fine for Alex Smith to play keep away with the ball last night, because that's how he plays fetch. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. Stephen Ruiz, my guest for the show. Do you think if it was any quarterback other than Alex Smith who walked off the field with the ball, thus manipulating the clock, perhaps unintentionally, it would be a hot topic on the morning shows? Let me pick a quarterback. Let's say it's Tom Brady. How does everyone react?
I mean, it's a total meltdown. Even if Bill Belichick is involved, I think it's a total meltdown.
Anyway, if it's Cam Newton. I mean, Alex Smith might be like, I would say Alex Smith, Teddy Bridgewater. I'm trying to think of the small cadre of quarterbacks who would not be deeply maligned for that. It's a small group.
There are not a lot of quarterbacks who are universally loved, but there, I think you have the two.
Yeah, those
and
are
Alex
the two.
Smith just earned it, and all he had to do was mutilate his leg.
Oh my God, when it was bleeding last night, I was like, I can't watch this.
Wait, that's the common thread. We said Teddy Bridgewater and Alex Smith.
Oh gosh. Oh gosh. Oh, I don't like that. Those guys are extraordinarily likable. It's hard to think of someone who, like Frank Gore, maybe. Frank Gore walks off the field with the ball. No one's going to yell at Frank Gore. But other than that, it was pretty funny. And it was an incredible upset. And I did talk about the Washington football team at length last week in a very positive way with Greg Rosenthal. So even though I didn't pick them to win, I feel like I was on the right side of history, at least recent history. Rather than focusing on them and that upset, I want to talk to you about the Steelers, because looking at this week's schedule, Steelers Bills, it already was an enticing game, but I actually think it's more enticing now. I mean, I'm really excited for this game, and we're coming off of teams that are, the recency bias. The Bills are coming off this incredible victory. Josh Allen, triumphant. He turned to the camera at the end of the game and said, "Suck it, Stephen Ruiz and Mina Kimes." It was actually an amazing television moment. And then the Steelers are coming off of this brutal loss. It really wasn't brutal. Like, Washington's been sneakily kind of a tough out. But I want to start on the Steelers offense versus the Bills defense. Because for me, the big takeaway from the Steelers upset was that this offense, which has been kind of one-dimensional for a minute now, was, I don't want to say exposed, but the Washington football team, which has a good defense, really zeroed in on that one dimensionality. In a way, we've seen defenses like the Ravens kind of did too, but there's definitely a bit of a blueprint now for playing Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this blueprint while watching this team all year. It just seems so easy to defend them, and I know teams haven't been able to do it, and mostly because they're just giving everything up underneath. But I think smarter teams will watch the film, come up with a plan that takes away those easy throws for Ben and force him to throw deep and over the middle, which is something he just has refused to do all season long.
Deep and over the middle. And then, he's not really done that. And then they are right now the worst rushing team in the NFL, right? Right. Obviously James Conner didn't play, but this is a team that, like, the whole run game has looked kind of broken all year. It's not just about the backs, the run blocking. I talked about the pass pro, but the run blocking has been an issue. The pass pro has been mitigated by how quickly Ben gets the ball out. But as much as the nerds say running doesn't matter, like, the Bills and Steelers are a great example of how running doesn't matter if you're an incredible passing team like Buffalo, right? Like, Buffalo is not efficient running the football. It doesn't matter because they don't have to. The Pittsburgh Steelers are not an incredibly efficient passing team. They're not explosive. So their inability to run the football seems to hurt them in a disproportionate fashion, or it did against Washington.
Yeah, running doesn't matter when you don't care about what looks the defense are in. But when you have a one-dimensional passing game, that matters a lot because there are certain looks you can get in that take away the specific things the Steelers do. And if you don't have to worry about the run, it's so much easier to get into those looks. And I think that's going to be a big issue when they start going up against good defenses in the playoffs, or at least smart defenses and smart coaching staffs.
Well, tell me about those looks and like what you saw out of Washington and I think Baltimore to some degree as well, and whether or not like the defenses going forward in the postseason through the end of the regular season are capable of executing that.
I mean, it's hard to tell off the broadcast and from the Washington game, but from Baltimore, it's getting in the receivers' faces, playing press man coverage, forcing Big Ben to throw into tight windows. And playing man coverage is a lot easier when you don't have to worry about the run because you can just focus on the receivers rather than your run fits and the gaps you're responsible for.
How dare you suggest that Big Ben's not going to take off the football and punish?
He had that little spin move yesterday. It took like 5 hours, but it worked. I don't remember the linebacker that got tricked by it, but I think he got replaced immediately by Thomas Davis, who is like 50 years old and has no knees.
Thomas Davis. I love watching Ben run. I don't know. I think our friend Nate Tice said it's like watching someone cross a street, kind of like a crosswalk where the lights, the time is kind of ticking down slowly and they're kind of running, but like you're not really running.
Right. Have you played Fall Guys, the video game, or seen it play? Like he moves like one of those characters. I think a lot of people that listen will probably play it and they know what I'm saying. That's how he moves. Like the feet are moving at a rapid pace, or not rapid, but rapid for Ben, but his body just isn't moving along with it.
Thank you for correctly probably stereotyping my listener demographic there. yeah. And then when he sacked, I this was my comp. It looks like like in the movies when a skyscraper comes tumbling down like into an empty highway and it's like and like kind of the ground shakes around him. And look, last night's the loss against Washington, it's not really Ben's fault, right? Like, it's not like he was inactive. First of all, they had like approximately either 55 to 56 drops. I lost count. So
next gen stats.
That's Mina Gen stats right there. Oh God, I would love to get a miles per hour on that Ben run. Darn, I should have got that. But yeah, like it's not like he was inaccurate, but he is a very specific type of quarterback. Insert Spider-Man meme with Alex Smith. At this stage in his career, and when your offense is as one dimensional as some of us have perhaps been saying all season, it reduces your margin of error, not just for the run game, but like you can't drop the football more than a couple of times because you know what I mean? It's not like,
yeah,
every single one of those 6 to 7 yard passes needs to hit.
And I think that's what both of us have been arguing all season with Steelers fans is that this is going to happen in games where they're, when you do have those drops, or maybe there's going to be pre-snap penalties, holding calls, one holding call, and it feels like the Steelers' drive is over because they don't push the ball downfield. And it reminds me of the 2017 Jaguars offense, where everything was either a crossing route, a shallow route, or a vertical route down the sideline with Blake Bortles. They just didn't want him to throw over the middle just because he's not very accurate and he's a slow processor. Obviously, that's not the case with Ben, but that's what their offense has become. And I think during that season, you saw teams kind of adjust to what the Jaguars were doing. I think it actually happened in 2018 when Bortles just fell off a cliff. And I'm afraid that you're going to see with Pittsburgh over the next month or two. And I have a theory on the drops, by the way.
Oh, what is it?
I think the drops are happening because he's throwing the ball short and over the middle. That's where the linebackers are. And I know if I was a receiver, I would be scared to death catching those passes, especially when my back is to the linebacker behind me. And that's kind of what's happening with Eric Ebron. Or at least
I was going to say, that's definitely true of Eric Ebron and maybe Juju. I kind of think Deontay Johnson just can't catch the football.
I mean, that could be the case.
It's annoying because he's so good. Like, he's such a great route runner and he's so dynamic in space. But he just has bad hands. Yeah, like he's been dropping the football all year. But I think that's a reasonable critique for perhaps why the other guys might be dropping the ball. I mean, so they're playing Buffalo, and we're talking about the other side of the football. You know, this is a Buffalo defense that has gotten their shit together over the last month. You know, they were really, really bad at the beginning of the season. It was kind of confusing in some ways because players in the secondary in particular, like Hyde, like you know, or even Tre'Davious White to some degree, they're good players. So I always thought they would sort of turn it around, but I'd be curious to as to your thoughts. One, how they match up with this Pittsburgh offense that we've been describing, and two, whether or not you think that turnaround is sustainable. Because, you know, they do blitz a lot, and they don't really get pressure consistently when they don't blitz. The linebacker group, which just got back Matt Milano, assuming Sain's healthy, has improved a lot. AJ Klein went from being like the worst linebacker in the NFL to one of the best linebackers in the NFL, which never seems like that seems like a bit of too much of a swing. And the Edmonds on them, Tremaine Edmonds. This is the Edmonds showdown. I just realized that. Oh, wow. Tremaine Edmonds has been playing better football. Do you think it's sustainable? And do you think they'll be good against Pittsburgh?
I do think they'll be good against Pittsburgh. Now, the sustainable question, there's two ways to answer that. And I view like every team, and this is kind of unfair, I view every team through the lens of how they match up with the Chiefs. And I don't think it's sustainable for beating the Chiefs, but against everyone else, I think it's fine. And when you have Sean McDermott, who's such a smart coach, and I think he just does a great job of game planning, I think that makes them a bad matchup for the Steelers because of how easy it is to game plan for the Steelers. As long as as long as Buffalo tackles and doesn't bust coverages, I think they'll be fine. It'll be hard for the Steelers to sustain those drives for like 10 or 12 plays.
Well, we're going to have a lot of time to talk about Kansas City versus Buffalo as we sort of careen towards the end of the season. But in my mind, I think, yeah, I agree with you about the defense. I think the Bills' best hope, if it comes to that, which would be the best, you know, possible outcome for them, is to get in sort of a Raiders style track beat with Kansas City, which kind of like, honestly, I actually think like we've had this debate a little bit all season, like what's better for playing the Chiefs, a defense team of like a balanced team with a really good defense or another team with a really good offense that can just kind of see who has the football last. I've felt it's the latter for a minute now. And Steven, like based on what we saw last night, the Bills offense does seem capable of that. Now, I don't want to talk about the Chiefs defense. They're very different from San Francisco, like in how they match up with Buffalo. But like when Josh Allen is in God mode, which is what we saw in September, and then it disappeared for a while. And last night, like he looked like he did in September last night. There's not, I don't know if there's really like a schematic, like a strong defensive answer. Because during that bad period where Josh Allen struggled, you saw teams sitting back, playing zone, not really blitzing. And then eventually Josh Allen would get frustrated and black out and do something dumb. One thing I noticed, like I think what jumped out to me last night was the lack of, like the total lack of dumb decisions. And, you know, there were a couple he should have thrown away at the end, whatever. But for the most part, not only was he, you know, very accurate, and then his strong arm was on display, he played really smart football.
So I'm going to make a comp that I don't think anyone else has made, and it might upset a few people, including yourself. I think the same, it's like playing Russell Wilson, except for Russell Wilson is like one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league, and he's super accurate and can just throw an accurate pass in any situation, whereas Josh Allen isn't that yet. But it's, if Josh Allen has that pre-snap read or Brian Daboll calls a play that gets a guy wide open, like there's no stopping the play because they have good receivers and Josh Allen has learned to throw a football accurately. And we knew how special his arm was. And then if things break down, he can get outside the pocket and make something happen. It's that in-between game where you have to keep Josh Allen in order to force him into mistakes, like keep him in the pocket, take away his first read. That's hard to do when you have great receivers and a great play caller. And then a guy that could just, you know, stiff arm a defensive end and throw a dime 30 yards downfield. But the teams that have had success against him have done that and kept him in the pocket and made him go to a second and third read. And that's when you see the blackout plays.
That's huge about keeping him in the pocket, right? Because the Niners simply do not have the horses. Honestly, they really couldn't last year either. Like that was their weird Achilles heel, was defending mobile quarterbacks, even beyond Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray, who they play in their own division. Like you saw that earlier when they played Daniel Jones, you know, for example, who is admittedly as fast as Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson, but actually he's probably faster than Russell Wilson at this point. But yeah, like you saw last night, even when they did get pressure, he was able to escape and make throws on the run or throw it away. Like, you didn't see the sort of containment that's necessary. Like, if you can't set the edge against Josh Allen, you will not win. The other issue too is just like, from a coverage perspective, the Bills wide receivers are so good. There's not really a good answer, because and I think you really saw that against San Francisco. Like, if you play zone, Cole Beasley is going to kill you. If you play man, Stephon Diggs is going to kill you. Like, they have, this is why I love that wide receiver group so much coming into the season, Steven, is like, they have such a complementary group of skill players.
It's a basketball lineup. They have a guy that can do, like, a guy for every job. And I think there's two types of defense in the NFL. There's a game plan defense that's going to change week to week, and that's like Belichick. I would put Spagnuolo in that bucket. And then there's the system guys who create this great system that you could play every week, and it applies to almost every offense. And I think the Bills do a great job against those system guys, whereas the game plan guys, as long as they have the dudes on defense to match up with them, I think those are the teams that are going to give the Bills problem. The issue for them is the Chiefs have that, and they have the best offense in maybe the history of the NFL.
You think the Chiefs have the dudes on defense? That's interesting.
I don't think they have the dudes on defense, but they have dudes in the right spot. Like, and I'm only thinking about Tyrann Mathieu, who you could just deploy all over the field, and he seems to be all over the field and can take away anything you want to do. Obviously, the outside corners are an issue if they're on their own and on an island, but those are the hardest throws in the game, and I don't know if Josh Allen can make them consistently and match Mahomes throw for throw in a potential matchup.
To me, it all comes down to that front, and if they can do what you and I just described, right? The Chiefs' D-line has been really inconsistent this year. Frank Clark disappears in games. I think Chris Jones, there's been games where he's kind of it for Kansas City up front, and I think, for me, like, if we're already talking about that Kansas City Buffalo matchup, it's gonna, like, Josh Allen, if he's playing like he did last night in September, is going to dice them up. But if there's like one or two drives where they can just either force a turnover, Tyrann Mathieu perhaps, or if that defensive line comes through, that can be enough because of how good their offense is. But talk a little bit more. We're looking at this weekend. Do you think this Pittsburgh defense, which does have the dudes ostensibly, although these dudes are dropping off, they're literally losing guys every week. How do you think they match up with this Buffalo offense?
I think they match up well because they're that type of team that could throw different looks at you. They're not, you don't know what they're going to be in on a given down.
Yes.
Like, say, the 49ers, and they could throw blitzes at you. And I really think it's going to be a test for Josh Allen. And if he passes this test, then, like, there's no more criticism of him. Like, you could still find things to nitpick in his game. Like you said, he has those moments where he blacks out and just throws it into coverage. But if I see him do it against a defense like the Steelers, who could take away some things like the run game, which has been good in Buffalo and has set things up in the passing game, then, I mean, you just got to admit that Josh Allen is a very good football player.
Do you feel like against Pittsburgh, this Buffalo offense might look a little bit different from what we saw? You know what I mean? Like, So there was a game. Who was it? Buffalo's also playing the Pats and the Dolphins to end the season. So it's not just Pittsburgh. They're facing some very interesting, complex, and diverse defenses. Like the Niners defense, the more I think about it, is really bad matchup for Buffalo, and it's probably something I should have anticipated a little bit going into the night. I mean, I picked Buffalo to win, but I didn't think that offense would absolutely annihilate San Francisco the way they did. But then when you really think about it, in football being about matchups, like, the San Francisco defense matches up much better with the Rams offense, and it makes sense that they had a, you know, easier time with them. But in the past, like, so when Buffalo played the Patriots earlier in the season, they ran the ball a lot. They ran the ball efficiently. You know, the Patriots are a smaller defense, right? They play more sub packages. So Brian Daboll, being a very good coach, adjusted his game plan. So I do wonder, like, as I look ahead at this kind of schedule of defenses, and then I look at Pittsburgh, just again, sticking to that, if we're going to see perhaps more Josh Allen designed runs, which is something I would do if I was Brian Daboll going into this matchup.
And I think one thing all those defenses will do is they'll try to give the Bills favorable run looks and try to entice them into running and not throwing it, because that's what you're afraid of with the Bills offense right now. It's not the run game. It's
totally
Stephon Diggs. It's Cole Beasley. It's Josh Allen creating on his own. So if you can get them to just run the ball, I think you win. Even if they're moving the ball efficiently, we've seen Bill Belichick do that throughout. He famously did it as the Giants defensive coordinator against the Bills in 1990. And we've seen those type of game plans even in recent years. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that out of the Steelers and maybe and definitely out of the Dolphins and the Patriots.
Are you at all, let's just wrap here, worried about the Steelers' defense? So, you know, that's obviously not why they lost last night to Washington. But they lost. So it's crazy, man. Like, when you really think about it, if you told me before the season this team's going to lose Devin Bush and Bud Dupree, I would be like, all right, well, they're probably done. But Robert Spillane was hurt, so it's unclear if he'll be available. Joe Hayden also is in concussion protocol now. Like, they're pretty manned down. Do you think that that's going to dramatically impact them in this game?
Yeah, I think you're always worried about a team that relies on a great defense, just because we know defensive performance just isn't sustainable, and we see why. It's like a weak link concept. If you and on defense, you have to rely on all 11 guys to be good. Like with the Chiefs, your left guard and your right guard might not be good, but it doesn't matter because you have Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. But on defense, if you lose one edge rusher, you lose your middle linebacker, you lose your backup linebacker, it becomes an issue. And I don't think great defenses match up well with great offenses in this era. So it was going to be a problem even if they were at full strength. Now that they're kind of banged up, it becomes a real issue for me.
All right. So you leaning Bills?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bills because I think Sean McDermott gives them the edge in that matchup of the Steelers offense versus the Bills defense. And then I'm always going to pick the better offense against a great defense.
Yeah, I'm leaning Bills too. I think they're the second best team in the AFC right now. Amazing how much a week can change things for in like the general public. So the second question I want to ask you is a pretty simple one. Is there any reason for the Eagles to not start Jalen Hurts?
Ooh, no. I think it makes all the sense in the world to start Jalen Hurts, because the only arguments you can make for starting Wentz, like, don't really hold up. And it's not just starting Wentz, it's starting a veteran quarterback over a rookie quarterback. Like, a veteran's going to get rid of the ball quickly. He's going to avoid turnovers. He's going to be more accurate. But none of those things apply to Wentz directly. Like, he holds on to the ball way too long. He makes dumb decisions. He's not accurate at all. So any worry you have about Hurts can also be applied to Wentz. Like, see what the young guy can do.
So I want to talk to you about what we saw out of Jalen Hurts, because I went back and watched it a couple times, actually, his drives. But I want to stick with the Wentz thing first. Like, so to me, like, the reason you don't start Carson Wentz is because the only reason is that financially you're tied to him for a couple years, really, at least, you know. But I actually think that doesn't hold up. One, because it's never, I understand why it impacts NFL decision making, but it's not even like a sunk cost issue for me. If you're going to fix Carson Wentz, right, like, which is the hope, it's not going to happen during the regular season. It's going to happen this summer. It's not going to happen with this iteration of the Bills offense, with this play calling, and in particular, this offensive line. Like, Carson Wentz isn't going to get better now. And so my feeling is, like, if your hope as an Eagles organization is like Carson Wentz is, this won't be totally, we wouldn't have burned $100 million or whatever. It's actually more. I actually think from the perspective of, like, your long-term investment, you should bench him, because playing him now seems to only be hurting him as a quarterback.
Yeah, even if you want Wentz to be your day one starter next year, there's no way you go into training camp next year without there being a competition. So get the most information you can on Hurts, and that makes you better prepared for going into training camp. And you could say, like, this is the gap between Hurts and Wentz. And if Hurts closes it, then we go with Hurts. But yeah, I agree with you. It can only get worse. Like Wentz might get hurt, which makes him impossible to trade, although I think it's hard to trade him anyway.
Yeah.
Or he might look even worse and just tank his trade value, which is probably likely given what's around them and how that play calling is going. So yeah, I don't see any benefit to starting him.
I actually think the only downside is that you tank Jalen Hurts' trade value, because I agree you're not trading Carson Wentz, but I don't really think that's so low on the list of concerns for the Eagles right now that I don't think it should matter. Like they're playing the Saints next week. Okay. So let me read you. I got these for our NFL Live today and it is bonkers. Here's where the Saints pass defense ranks since week 9. I asked for the last. Okay. So here we go. Since week 9, they rank first in QBR, first in completion percentage, first in open percentage, and their touchdown to interception ratio is 2-9. Like, I think they're the best defense in the NFL right now, which is a take of mine that looked terrible for a month and then finally has curved the arc of take is bent back towards being right. So, you know, like, this could be ugly for Jalen Hurts. It probably will be ugly, but at least he can use his feet and not die on the field. So like what I saw out of him, I'll start by saying like he was not my favorite prospect headed into the draft based on what we saw in college. So in some ways he actually outperformed my own personal expectations. He obviously didn't like light the world on fire. I think he benefited a little bit too from the Packers defense playing off and giving him some of the stuff underneath, but he had two gorgeous throws, really, really, really nice throws, that the kind of throws we have not seen from Carson Wentz in a very long time. And then I think most importantly, his mobility is just such an important factor for this Eagles offense as currently constructed, and helps not only a very decimated offensive line, but it'll help the run game as well.
Yeah, and I think one thing that benefits him, and it's been held against him, at least it was before the draft, is that if he decides to take off and scramble, he's just going to do it. Whereas Carson Wentz doesn't really just take off and scramble. He tries to spin around in the pocket and stay alive and keep his eyes downfield, and that usually leads to disaster. Like, one thing I've noticed is all of Carson Wentz's highlights, the start of the highlights, look exactly the same as the start of his lowlights. Like, it's him spinning out of the pocket. Either he throws a dime downfield or he gets clobbered by a defensive lineman and just fumbles the ball. But I think that assertiveness when he is scrambling gives Jalen Hurts an edge there. And one thing we didn't see against the Packers is what this run game is going to look like with Hurts. Because I think Hurts isn't Wentz. He's the type of quarterback you can run like read option with and zone read with, where if they crash the end, he can take off and run and pick up like 8 or 9 yards. But Hurts is some guy that you can actually build the run game around. Like, you can keep the ball in his hand. He runs like a running back. Like, he can see the holes and hit the holes. So I think that changes everything for them. And if the run game's improved on first and second down, third down is a lot easier.
You know who he reminds me of when he runs? I think you might hate this. It's another quarterback. It's a quarterback whom he might be playing this weekend.
Oh no.
I think Tatum is a great runner. He's really athletic, and they're both like really fluid, and I actually think they're built pretty similarly too. Yeah. I think it's a good I'm not comparing him to Taysom Hill as a quarterback. I'm just saying when he runs, it kind of reminds me of Taysom.
No, I agree with that. Whereas like they're real runners. They're not just taking advantage of space the defense gives them because they're quarterbacks. Like, they can create their own space in the run game. One thing I'll say about Taysom Hill, and I can't unsee it anymore. Watch him when he runs. Like, his legs look shorter than his torso.
He has a very long torso and smaller legs. They're almost so weird exactly to me. The same size. I just looked it up. So maybe that's influencing me. Listen, Jalen Hurts versus Taysom Hill, like, that is appointment freaking television. Unfortunately, one of those teams is playing a more difficult defense. Oh, the Eagles defense isn't bad, but yeah, I'll watch the hell out of that game. A lot of takes will be at stake.
Yes. I will say this. I think Jalen Hurts gives them a better chance against the Eagles. I think Carson Wentz is probably a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts is at this point, but Jalen Hurts' running ability gives them a better chance, because if they have to pass the ball and they have to complete passes on third and long against that Saints defense, which is just suffocating receivers right now, I don't think they have a chance.
Yeah, I don't care who it is against. Like, did you see what they did to Matt Ryan? Oh my God. All right. Let's take a quick break and then come back and rip the Band-Aid off of the Seahawks-Giants game.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
So, my beloved Seattle Seahawks took an enormous L this weekend. The only comfort I have is that Russell Wilson didn't lose to Danny Dimes. I'm not really going to talk about the Seahawks defense because I don't really think there's anything to talk about. They've been interesting. Decent is the word I was looking for. I don't know why I said interesting, but against limited competition. So I don't know. I don't really think there's a lot to take away. I want to ask you for your diagnosis for what is wrong with the Seahawks offense. I've thought about it a lot over the last few days. I've been stewing in it. And I want to go to an objective source here first before I get to give my thoughts.
So everyone has been thinking about who's to blame. Is it the offensive coordinator? Is it Pete Carroll? Is it Russell Wilson? And I think the person to blame is Ben Baldwin.
For those who don't know, Ben Baldwin is a person on Seahawks Twitter, an economist who writes for The Athletic, who has long been advocating for Russell Wilson to throw the ball 100% of the time, which I suspect might be where you're going with this.
Right. We've seen defenses adjust to that. They read those charts that Ben Baldwin posts too, and they see that the Seahawks are running on first and second down more than any other team in the league. And I think they've adjusted. You can see it when you're watching the game. You don't need to be Bill Belichick to break down what's happening. They're playing a lot of two-high safeties, and those aren't looks the Seahawks used to get when they were running the ball a lot on first and second down. And I think that, one, it makes it harder to take those deep shots. Now, if you are passing on first and second down, you're forced to do the quick game stuff. And that's not really Russell Wilson's strength. He has a lot of strengths as a quarterback and very few weaknesses, but that might be one of the weaknesses. And I looked up his success rate on quick game passes, so 0 to 3 step drops. And this year he's 16th, which isn't that bad. Last year he was 17th, and then the year before that he was 29th. And one of the reasons is he takes a lot of sacks. And one thing you could say about Russell Wilson is he does tend to not panic in the pocket, but he will drop his eyes from time to time. And if the offensive line thinks they're blocking for a quick concept and the quarterback holds the ball, it's going to lead to a lot of sacks. And he takes sacks in quick game at one of the highest rates in the league. And I think that's one of the concerns football guys had about the let Russ cook movement.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of Wilson and the coordinator. So, which kind of cuts to what you're saying, right? Like, I think it's both Wilson's weaknesses that you've identified correctly, and also I think a lack of adjustment. Like, honestly, that offense looked like they've never played too high in their lives. And because it wasn't like there were some concepts where Wilson was ignoring some of his underneath options and just like waiting for DK Metcalf to get open downfield. That absolutely happened a few times, but there was a disturbing lack of cover two beaters as well. Since week 9, Russell Wilson ranks 23rd in QBR, and he has the second highest sack percentage in the NFL behind Carson Wentz. It's really not great company. I think a lot of it has to do with exactly what you're describing. I actually should look up how many of those sacks are coming on early downs relative to the rest of the season. While I think some of it can be solved by running it a bit more early, I also think, like, I agree with you that Russell Wilson's strength is not the quick game, but there should be ways to manufacture it better. And there have been games I can think of in Seattle Seahawks football history where I think of the Steelers game last year where they've gotten it going on early downs in response to this sort of defense. It feels like Russell Wilson looks demonstrably uncomfortable all the time. You know, I think coming out of that game, like if you just looked at the numbers, you would assume that pass protection was bad, but it actually was. Like, I know they were playing their backup right tackle, whose name is Chad Wheeler, but it actually wasn't that bad. I don't think it's like there. It did feel like the Giants defense was also doing a very good job defending play action and sort of the boots and stuff. I just think Russell Wilson, like, he looks uncomfortable in this offense right now.
Yeah, I noticed that too, especially against the Giants. There were no in-rhythm deep shots at all. I don't think I saw one.
There wasn't a single one to the right side of the field. I think there was like one to the left, but he was not, yes, totally.
Yeah, nothing was in rhythm. And when Russ is in rhythm, we talked about Josh Allen in God mode. That's God mode for Wilson. Like, if he's getting the perfect read before the snap and getting the ball off, like, he's the best. I think he's one of the best throwers of the football that we've ever seen in the NFL. So when he sees it and he's getting open guys, he's going to make those throws, and that's when he goes into God mode. It's when you make him uncomfortable, and it's the same thing I talked about with Allen. Like, when you force him into that middle game where he has to stand in the pocket and read defense and go 1, 2, 3 through his progressions. Like, I don't want to blame his height, but his height is a factor. I don't think it stopped him from being a great quarterback. Obviously, he's arguably been the best quarterback, but it does, you know, offer some obstacles to the offense.
Well, because by the time you get to that second read, your passing lanes are typically clogged. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that always with Russell Wilson, right? Like, he can pass it over the middle of the field because he's a really smart quarterback. He is very good at reading defenses. But if you take away the first read and you're able to, it's not like, oh, he's not smart enough to read, you know, go through his progressions. It's more of a function of pure physics. I think you're absolutely right. Like, we've seen this throughout the course of his career. If you take away the first read, the middle of the field disappears. He is able to attack the middle of the field typically on that initial read. And we've seen him be covered too, you know, with seam routes and such in the past. It's not like he can't play cover two. But the problem is, you know, if he is made uncomfortable and you're able to cover him up, that part of the field goes away. And then he's just kind of praying that he can hit one of his guys outside. And we're seeing that. Like, that's something that's affected them. So let me ask you this. Like, other than potentially running the ball a bit more on early downs, what else do you think this offense should do?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not sure I have the answer. I think they just got to study the rest of the league and see how they're attacking the way defenses are playing now. My theory is that Schottenheimer, he came up in this league when it was a single high league, when it was cover one, cover three. And now teams are going more quarters and they're learning how to take away crossers and the routes that used to beat cover three. So it's just an adjustment. Maybe he doesn't have it in him. Maybe he does. I think it might take the offseason for it to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen in the middle of a regular season.
I mean, I'll propose one other thing. Other than running the ball a bit more on early downs, what about Wilson keeping it a bit more on early downs with more options?
Yeah, I'm always for the quarterback being more involved in the run game. I just think it makes the run game so much easier. It doesn't matter how good your offensive line is. It makes their job easier. It gives the defense something else to worry about. It affects what kind of coverages they can play. I always think it's a good thing.
He also has looked good running the football this year. A lot of it's come on scrambles. But I feel like mixing in more designed runs for him on early downs would help alleviate some of the disrespect you're seeing from defenses. Disrespect is a weird way to put it, but the way defenses are defending him. And it would, you know, ultimately open up some of those deep shots that have been covered up on first and second down. You know, like if you're afraid of Russell Wilson keeping the ball and going for 8 or 9, or even more on first down, you're less likely to sit back and just, you know, then you can go back to cooking.
Yeah, you need an extra guy in the box if the quarterback's a run threat, and that extra guy is usually a safety.
All right, last question I wanted to ask you is a bit forward-looking, but it's coming off of the shocking news that Greg Williams was fired. Shocking in timing. I did enjoy the 8 hours of NFL Twitter debating whether or not a defensive coordinator who was obviously not going to be on his team next year was deliberately trying to tank the season. Like I did these jokes with like a tank drawing on the field, but like I don't understand how people were arguing that purely from a set aside the football guy stuff and like how much does Greg Williams, you know, go zero blitz, whatever. Like, there's logically, you could know nothing about football. You could be a human being who is just literally watching a football game for the first time, and you would say, why would this person do that knowing he's not going to be there next year? It doesn't make any sense.
And when you add on the layer of who Greg Williams is, like, if you also let that person watch one interview with Greg Williams, they go, oh, yeah, that makes sense that he would do something like that.
Yes.
It just because.
Checks out. So, I'm going to be cool and once again reference one of my own tweets because that's what cool people do and it's not at all a lame thing to do. But after the Chargers got absolutely wiped by New England and, you know, there were more special teams disasters and all that stuff, I tweeted this opinion. The Chargers head coaching job is attractive in many ways, but it's also like buying a house where someone was murdered. Do you think the Chargers job is attractive? Well, actually, let's do it this way. Which of these jobs is the most attractive? Ready? Jets, Chargers, Lions, Falcons, Texans. Am I leaving out any obvious ones? There might be some other teams in the mix, but those seem like the obvious five teams that are going to be open.
Yeah, and I started thinking about like what other types of houses the other teams were.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And the Jets are like a very crappy house. It looks terrible, but in the backyard, there's a nice pool. Love and that it. Nice pool is obviously Trevor Lawrence.
Yes, absolutely.
The Texans, it's a great house, but there is a creepy dude living in the basement.
the Texans isn't a great house. It's like one of those like mansions where like the foyer is awesome. Or there's like one really great room and every other room is terrible.
And there's the creepy guy in the
and the creepy guy. The
maybe he's in the attic. Okay. Whatever Jack Easterby is. Okay. And then the Jaguars is
oh,
the
I
job.
The Jaguars. Yeah.
Oh, I think that's the job I would least want.
Ooh, I don't feel that way, but okay.
Because one, you're relying on your GM to do a lot of good work. And I don't know if that second quarterback that gets drafted is a sure thing.
Dubious, yeah.
So, and cap space to me is just fake. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, having a lot of cap space, when has a team ever turned a lot of cap space into, like, a winning formula?
Yeah, I think the Colts have made some good signings. But, yeah, I feel you. I think the Jaguars is, like, the recently flipped house where you're like, this is cool. There's, like, a lot to work with here. Or maybe it's, like, one of those renovation projects. Like, the bones are good, but
And then the Lions are a house. It's like the Chargers, but it's obvious that a murder happened. Like, there's blood all over the facade of the building.
The dead body is still inside.
There's no secrets.
I think the Lions are the worst job.
Yes.
Not the Jaguars of the group. What do you think is the best job?
It's between the Texans and the Chargers for me. I would go with the Texans, even though Jack Easterby's there, just because Deshaun Watson, I honestly think he's been the second best quarterback in the league this season. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's been
better than Aaron Rodgers.
Given everything that he's had to work with, I think he's been more impressive. And the fact that he's 25 and doing this stuff, and Aaron Rodgers is an elite quarterback, and he has been. So
we're debating. Okay, so we're actually debating. This is, no one on sports television has ever done this, but we're innovating by debating MVP today. And it's like, you know, the Rodgers Mahomes debate. And I actually, so like, I think Aaron Rodgers has been excellent this year and is a totally worthy candidate. But I'm really sick of this Aaron Rodgers has nothing to work with. Like, dude has the best offensive line, the best wide receiver in the NFL, a much better running game, and a very good coordinator. Like, you can argue as a group, his pass catching group isn't amazing, but like, that's really good. And it's certainly better than what Deshaun Watson is working on.
Anyway. Like, Deshaun Watson's go-to guy is like Jordan Akins, his tight end. It's not Devontae Adams.
I'm really hoping that works out. I also have Robert Tonyan. I have a lot of random tight ends. Okay, so you think the Texans really is the best? That's fascinating. Huh.
Because one thing, I think their problems, like with salary cap and draft picks, is kind of overblown. It's a one-year issue. Like, after next year, the draft picks are all there, and I think they even might have an extra second-round pick. And then the salary cap is fixable this offseason. They can cut a few people and have like $30 million in cap space. And then the next year, it just expands even further. So I really don't think their front office issues are that bad either. And you have an elite quarterback. That's what everyone wants. It just gives you a head start.
Aside from the curse, the Chargers job is good, right? Like, you have the pieces in place there. You have a very promising young quarterback. You have an elite wide receiver. You have a good tight end. You have an elite pass rusher. You have Derwin James, maybe. But it is cursed. I'm going to rank them this way. Ooh, you really sold me on the Texans. I was not. I'm mixed now. But I think that the Jets, Chargers, and Texans are the three best. And then I'm doing two tiers because I'm lame. And then the Lions, Falcons, Jaguars are the worst.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I would not want the Falcons job, because that's the worst part of it. You have like a quarterback who's good, but he's tied to the team because of the salary cap.
Yeah.
And like, who else on that team are you really building around? Like, Julio Jones is great and one of the best receivers in the world, but I mean, how many years does he have left? You can't really build your future around him. So it's like Grady Jarrett and maybe like the rookie they just took in the first round this past year. That's it.
How dare you leave out Younghoe Koo? How the leading scorer in the NFL? How dare you?
A franchise kicker. I forgot about that.
I think he's now hit over 50 for like four games straight, tying an NFL record or something. I saw something. I feel like I do that a lot on this podcast. I'm like, I think the statistic is right. But he has been crushing it. Hashtag Pro Bowl vote. Hashtag Younghoe Koo. I don't even know if you are supposed to do the name. I think it's hashtag Pro Bowl vote though. That campaign starts here. Okay. I am convinced now that the Texans job might be the best. I didn't think it was going into this conversation, but you have told me. You know what? I still think it's the Chargers, even though they're haunted. You get to live in LA.
That's true. That's a good point.
Plus, no one's watching, so even if you're not bad for a couple years, no one will care.
Right, like Anthony Lynn has made some like really bad decisions late in games, and like no one really started to notice it. I mean, people noticed it, like there'll be a tweet every couple of Sundays, but no one's ever like, Anthony Lynn is just
like a really angry Warren Sharp tweet as every right. Like, yeah, no, for the most part, he's kind of skated. It's not like what he did is not as bad as Greg Williams, but like we're not building studio show segments around Anthony Lynn's decision making, and that's a benefit but ownership. That's
a problem. But I think the same thing applies to the Texans. I'm just like, my whole thing is based around Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. From an ownership perspective, I feel like the Falcons, Lions, and Jags, who are like the worst teams, they have better ownership, but otherwise not so great. All right. We're going to spend more time talking about those teams during the offseason, but let's wrap, as always, with five questions for our guest.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
So first question, I kind of have a sense of where you're going to go with this based on what we talked about, but I did want to ask you if you think MVP is still up for debate, and if so, how would you rank your top three?
I do think it is, but I, like, as things stand, I think it's up for debate, but I am fully confident that Patrick Mahomes is just going to run away with it. So I would rank him Mahomes, Rodgers, and I mean, I honestly don't care about number three. I would give my vote to Deshaun Watson.
I give my vote to Deshaun Watson. Well, no, after Wilson, but that was a few weeks ago. But now this bit is Watson. Shoot, you know what? I'm gonna make that case today. I'm gonna go full troll on the show.
Nice, I'd love it. No, make the case that he should win MVP outright.
Yeah, I am. Because I'm gonna be like, if we're truly talking about value and like what's around a player, I'm workshopping my television takes right now. Okay. So question two. So I should have said this at the very beginning of the podcast, but Steven, in addition to writing for The Win, hosts a podcast that you guys should definitely check out. It's called The Counter. It's a football show. You come out twice a week, right? Twice a week?
Yep.
Makes me feel lazy.
And we're adding Charles McDonald to the lineup.
Wow. It's like all of my, I feel like I'm the farm team for other shows.
Yeah, you really are.
Damn. Okay. I got to keep scouting. That's another way to look at it. I might be the greatest GM in the history of football. Podcast. Okay. But he also, on top of that, is perhaps the world's preeminent chronicler of the graphics, the cartoon drawings of football players that have been used this season on Fox Sports. You recently, I think you assembled all of them in one place? All of them?
I did.
Yes.
What do you mean perhaps? There's no debate about it. I am number one.
What's his name? Bernard. Remember? A guy tweeted at us. What was your heart pounding when you saw that tweet? Were you so
embarrassed? My God. I was so embarrassed. But I fixed that mistake within 2 minutes.
Okay. So I guess I'll just ask you straight up, which one do you think is the best? Which is your favorite?
Okay, which is my favorite? That's a different question. My favorite, and it's the first one I ever noticed, was Ben Roethlisberger, because I think that's the most ridiculous one.
He's like jacked, right?
And my favorite thing is that Ben Roethlisberger is like jacked, but then you look at a guy like Derrick Henry and like, or DK Metcalf, and DK Metcalf just like looks like a regular dude. Like, why is Ben Roethlisberger this jacked superhuman, but DK Metcalf, who's actually a jacked superhuman, looks smaller than him?
Jacked Phillip Rivers is also really good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Is it all by one person?
See, I don't think so, because there's different styles. Like, I've really focused on this. There's different styles of drawing. And I can, like, if you showed me an example of, say there's three artists and you showed me an example of all their work, past drawings that have nothing to do with NFL, I think I could match them to the artist. That's how in deep I am with this. People don't understand.
Okay. Which one do you think is the most lifelike or like correct?
Ooh, DeAndre Swift.
Specific.
Yeah, I was already thinking about it. I'm telling you, I've studied these things. It looks like one of those sketches that are like real life hyperrealism. Like, it looks like that. They did a really good job.
The Baker one is really expressive. Like, they gave him really shifty eyes.
Yes. Those are my favorite.
What are you up to? Which brings me to my next question. I didn't want to ask you about this in the body of the show because, frankly, I've angered enough fan bases. And I'm also not sure I 100% agree with you, but you kind of went in on the Browns being overrated after their great triumph over the Tennessee Titans. Yesterday I played the bad guy in pointing out the Titans defense is terrible. And it really, to me, it was less like, it was less like, I feel like so I picked the Titans, so I'm an idiot. Okay. But I'm an idiot because I thought this through. I overrated the Titans defense against the Colts, who were absolutely decimated, right, on that offensive line. I was like, oh, maybe they're not all bad. Well, it turns out they are very, very bad. I also think, you know, Baker Mayfield, like, he was untouched, unbothered, unpressured, but he also made some really nice throws, which is a thing we know he can do when he is unbothered. In one sentence, give me a prediction for how this Browns season finishes. Just give me a prediction for how the Browns, and that way, if you're wrong, I can taunt you.
They get embarrassed by the first good defense they play in the playoffs.
They're playing the Ravens and the Steelers. So.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and it's not going out on a limb, but I'm going to predict they're going to look horrible in those two games because those are the type of defenses that will give them problems. My thing with the Browns, even after Sunday's win, is all good teams, all contenders have a plan B, and I have not seen the Browns beat a team with their plan B.
Good point.
And I think we overreact to week results.
No.
Right. That's not a hot take. But you watch the Browns, and I'll just focus on Baker. Like, our knocks on Baker have been, what does he do in a tight pocket? What does he do when they take away his first read and there's bodies around him? So when he goes out and completes a bunch of deep passes to wide open receivers from clean pockets, I think he was only pressured 4 times and did not complete a pass when he was pressured. Like, that doesn't change anything about what we've seen from Mayfield. Why is that changing our perception of him? He didn't show us anything that we didn't already know he could do. And I think that applies to the Browns as a whole in that game.
Yeah, we also didn't talk about the second half, like, at all. Like, everybody was like, that didn't happen. But yeah, I think we're going to learn a lot in the next 2 weeks, and I'll just leave it at that. I think, you know what? Before we talk about the Browns and the playoffs, let's just watch the next 2 weeks. Like, you know, just like, you know.
My thing was like, let's just wait for them to have a better point differential than the Washington
football team is good. Okay. Question 4. I've noticed this season. So you've been watching The Bachelorette this season. I don't know how many seasons you've watched. You seem to be new to the franchise.
I've seen, my first season was Becca.
Okay, so fairly new. I'm like a student of the show, so the way you are with Fox graphics, I've watched almost every season. This season is Tayshia. People who don't watch the show are very angry listening, but I'm going to ask you, who would you pick out of her contestants if you were Tayshia?
See, now I'm, Ivan. I was blanking on his name, but Ivan, I think. That's,
I haven't seen Still.
I did like a prediction when they made the transition to Tayshia, and that was my pick just based off the previews, and I'm sticking with it. I don't know what other guy makes sense for her.
I like Brendan, the guy who wears turtlenecks, but I like Ivan too.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Brendan is that guy that she keeps around, and she's going to just slit his throat with 4 people left, and it's going to be horrible, and he's going to cry, and everyone on Twitter is going to cry with him, but it's happening.
Let me tell you though, as a student of the show, and I'm unspoiled, it's never the guy you like who's going to win. So Ivan's not going to win. Brendan's not going to win. It's going to be one of the jockier dudes. All right. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. Ooh. So Lenny saw some of your takes about Josh Allen for the season, and he's heard his mom apologize. He wants to know when your apology is coming.
Who am I apologizing to? Bills fans are Josh Allen.
Ooh, that's a good way to put it. Josh Allen, not Bills fans. That makes it harder.
See, I have no problem apologizing to Josh Allen. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I didn't see it coming. It's an unprecedented turnaround. I don't care if that's a cop out. I'm going with it. Like, we've never seen this in the history of Earth. No one just learned how to throw a football. So that's my cop out. I don't care if it's cowardly.
Do you apologize to Bills fans?
Oh, no, never. I will never apologize to Bills fans. I'm sorry, Lenny. I'm not doing it.